You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Governments of Canada have declared Israel's values are Canada's values. Further, according to Peter Kent, current junior foreign minister, an attack on Israel would be considered an attack on Canada. Next month, this symbiosis will be commemorated by Canada and Israel issuing a single stamp to be used by both countries. The director of the Israeli Postal Service stated, "What could be a more symbolic and fitting way to express 60 years of cooperation and friendship between Israel and Canada than a joint stamp issue, the merging of each country's paper ambassadors?" In his latest book, titled Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid, author and activist Eve Engler goes much deeper than symbolism and stereotypes to reveal the real dimensions of Canada-Israel relations. And Eve joins me in the studio. Welcome, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
And first of all, congratulations on writing a book, one which is very informative and very necessary, I think. You start your analysis in the 19th century, which really goes back quite some time, with Christian Zionists in Canada. Why do you go back so far, and why start with Christian Zionists?
Well, I mean, I think that it's always important to know a bit of the history, and personally I was surprised that to find that the Zionist movement in Canada didn't start as a Jewish movement, but actually started as a Christian movement in the late 1800s, mid-1800s. The preeminent Canadian Christian Zionist in the 1860s, 1870s was a man by the name of Henry Wentworth Monk, who was an Ottawa area businessman who believed in a Dominion of Israel as part of the British Empire, similar to the Dominion of Canada, where Jews would go to the Middle East and create a country as part of the British Empire. And Henry Wentworth Monk and many others at that time saw in the Zionist movement the fulfillment of biblical proclamations in terms of biblical prophecies. And I was really taken aback to see to understand that to understand Canadian Jewish Zionism in this country, you have to understand the political culture in which it emanated, and that is a political culture of on one hand the sort of reading the Bible literally, Christians reading the Bible literally, as well as the growing interest of the British Empire in the Middle East. And as a Canada, as a dominion of the British Empire, obviously the Canadian political and economic elite were very supportive of British imperial interests, and I believe that's a big explanation for why Canadian politicians in the late 1800s, early 1900s were strong supporters of the Zionist movement. So into the early 1900s, the creation of the Jewish Zionist movement, I think, is intimately tied, or the extent to which the Jewish Zionist movement in this country took traction is intimately tied to the political culture of Canada in the late 1800s, which was, in the case of Zionism, which was one, this Christian Zionist movement, two, as a dominion of the British Empire and a vision of supporting Great Britain's imperial aspirations.
Are there expressions of Christian Zionism in prime ministers or other elite figures in Canada in the early 20th century, or...?
Basically, from what I can tell, basically every Canadian prime minister, I found a quote of some sort that basically is a reflection of Christian Zionist thinking. Sometimes you never know if it's just their justification, if there's rationale. Someone like Lester Pearson, who is makes a number of sort of Christian Zionist claims. I'm not sure if Pearson really believed in Christian Zionism, or if he really believed in Western Empire, and that the Christian rationale was more of a justification for his imperial beliefs. But throughout Canadian Prime Ministers, Arthur Meighen, Pearson, Mackenzie King, and others, Saint Laurent, they make Christian Zionist statements that that are in support of Zionist aspirations, and then post Israel's creation in terms of supporting Israel.
Do you see this as a prominent feature of contemporary Canada-Israel relations, that is, an engagement on the issue by Christian Zionists?
Yeah, I think the Harper government is that's one thing that when we discuss the Bush administration's, Canadians discussing the Bush administration's strong support for Israel, we often cite this the evangelical base, right-wing evangelical base of the Bush administration in the U.S. And I think that it's not as significant, of course, the evangelical, right-wing evangelical movement is not as significant in Canada as it is in the U.S., but it's still significant. So they talk about somewhere between 2.5 and 3.5 million evangelicals in this country. And just as an example, on the 25th anniversary of the John Hagee Ministries Night for Israel a couple years ago in Toronto, in a single event, they raised more than $500,000. John Hagee, of course, is a preeminent U.S. Christian Zionist. At a single event, they raised more than $500,000 for Israel. And so there's millions of dollars raised every year from the Christian Zionist movement in this country for Israel. And people like McVetti, who's the preeminent Canadian Christian Zionist today, he's a high-level conservative party operative, heads things like Defend Marriage Coalition in Ottawa. He heads the John Hagee Ministries of Canada, and this is somebody who's well tied in with the Harper government, and I think also a number of Harper officials, people like Stockwell Day, are quite open Christian Zionists, as well as Harper himself, of course. So I think that the Christian Zionist thinking does contribute to the Harper government and its pro-Israel position and the general political culture in this country, which is so supportive of Zionism.
You mentioned Lester Pearson. He was first a foreign minister, then he became the Prime Minister of Canada. He won a Nobel Prize for policies that he pursued in the Middle East. Now, typically in Canadian discussion, popular discussion for sure, he's referred to as a peacemaker and a symbol of Canada's positive, constructive, neutral role in relation to the Middle East. Your portrait is very, very different.
Well, I don't think it's just a question of the Middle East. Noam Chomsky refers to Pearson as a war criminal for his role in Vietnam, and I think there's a strong case to be made there. In the case of the Middle East, Pearson played an important role in 1947 at two different United Nations bodies discussing the British Mandate of Palestine, and Pearson was basically totally uninterested in the interests of the majority indigenous population of Palestine. What Pearson cared about at these UN negotiations was, one, what Washington had to say, two, what London had to say, three, what Moscow had to say, maybe a little bit about what a Jewish Zionist movement in this country had to say, but didn't care at all, basically, about the interests of the indigenous Palestinian population. And he's been referred to as the Lord Balfour of Canada by supporters of Zionism, and I think Pearson contributed in a very negative way to the injustice of the 1947 partition plan on Palestinians, and it continued into when he was prime minister. Pearson played a fairly important role. Pearson's government played a fairly important role in creating the climate that justified Israel's invasion of its neighbors in the 1967. War. There were, of course, Canadian peacekeepers in Egypt at that time, and they sort of created this context at the UN that helped justify Israel's invasion, Canada was condemned by Al Aram newspaper, Egyptian newspaper, in the lead-up to 1967 war as a stooge of the Western powers who seek to colonize the Arab world with Israel's help. So Pearson, I think, played a very strong, one-sided advocate of Zionism and of Israel, and this any notion of Pearson being an honest broker is just absurdity.
this gap from, let's say, Pearson as Prime Minister to Harper as Prime Minister in between? Is there any significant variation from that one-sided support of Israeli policies and practices?
I wouldn't say there's significant. I think there is consequential. I think that the Trudeau government and the Chrétien government were less Israel, right or wrong. They were willing to provide at least some diplomatic criticism of Israeli policy. So I think there's slight improvements in the case of Trudeau and Chrétien. For people who are saying that Harper's position is all of a sudden taking Canada away from its honest broker status, I mean that's not the basis of that. Canada's always been one-sided supporter of Israel. It's just a question of Chrétien and Trudeau were maybe 80% in support of Israel, and the Harper government's 99.9% in support of Israel.
Those are governments which are Liberal Party affiliated or dominated, or Conservative Party. What about the NDP, its predecessor, the CCF? They've never formed a national government, but have their policies with regards to Israel and this one-sidedness been significantly different from those of the dominant political parties in our country?
In the early 1940s, the CCF was antagonistic to Zionism. That was the dominant opinion, that it was that Zionism was serving British imperialism in the Middle East. But that changed before Israel's creation, and since from Israel's creation until at least the early 80s, it's actually really striking to see the extent to which the CCF, later NDP, alongside the labor movement, the Canadian Labor Congress, have been so strongly supportive of Israel. So in 1975, Tommy Douglas, considered the greatest Canadian by one poll, actually went to Israel and spoke to the Histadrut Labor Federation and basically said the only reason why anyone would be critical of Israel is because of how well it treats its workers. This was 8 years into Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, 27 years after Israel and the Zionist movement had expelled, ethnically cleansed, if you like, 750,000 Palestinians in the 47-48 war. So it's striking to see the history of the left support for Zionism in this country and Israeli policy. In the talks that I do, I actually put up this quote from Tommy Douglas in 1975. And while I'm very critical of where the NDP and much of the labor movement is at today on Israel, it is a sea change. There's been a significant change in opinion over the past couple of decades. It's gotten a lot better, a lot more critical of Israeli policy, of Zionism. It's far from where it should be, but there has been a significant improvement, which I think is really because there are numerous activists across the country who have been tirelessly bringing the issue to the fore. So there has been a change, but it's obviously far from where it should be.
Aside from the realm of diplomacy, which we've focused on so far, Canada-Israeli relations exist in the business realm, the military realm, intelligence activities. What would you highlight from some of those to give people a sense of the intimacy and importance of Canadian support for building Israeli apartheid?
I think the role of CSIS is the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. Their role with Mossad is extensive, and the extent to which Canada has spied on Palestinians and passed that information on to Israel, and Israeli agents have often used Canadian passports when doing foreign assassination missions. And that's according to the former Canadian ambassador, with the tacit acknowledgement of Canadian intelligence world. The corporate contributions to the occupied territories, Montreal-based companies' role in building settlements, Canadian companies' role in the Trans-Israel Highway, which is really sort of about strengthening Israel's control over the West Bank. So there are significant corporate connections, as well as the realm of private charity to Israel, and not just the fact that it's private charity, but also the role of the tax rebates and the charitable status that many organizations have means that the Canadian taxpayer is actually subsidizing subsidizing millions of dollars in Canadian private donations that are going into the occupied territories, into the settlements. These are, of course, settlements that are illegal according to international law. And the Canadian government subsidizes millions of dollars every year of money coming from this country going into occupied territories.
How would you explain this long-lasting, this extensive, often unwavering Canadian government support for Israel?
Well, in the book, there's basically five reasons put forward. And one is the Christian Zionist movement. Two is the role of Canadian media, which I think on most issues reflects the interests or the views of the political and economic elite. And that's, of course, the case on Israel as well. But I think there are some particulars, particularly the CanWest Global and the fact that the former founder of the Canada-Israel Committee, Izzy Asper, was also the founder of CanWest Global, means that was this is the largest media conglomerate in the country. Of course, it dominates the Vancouver area mediascape more than any other city in the country. And their role in being supportive of Israel, I think, is important. The use of anti-Semitism as a way to stop people from discussing Palestinian human rights is important. Obviously, there's also a Jewish pro-Israel lobby. I think that's sometimes a little bit exaggerated. But I think the main issue, the main explanation for Canadian support for Israel is the power of empire and the extent to which Canada, for 100-plus years, has been tied into initially British Empire and today American Empire. And the history of Canadian foreign policy is one of on one hand, supporting empire, on the other hand, supporting Canadian corporate interests. The notion that Canadian politicians would stand up for Palestinian human rights just because it's the right thing to do there's no basis in the history of Canadian foreign policy for that. They stand up for issues where if there is an international force, a source of power internationally that is forcing them to do that, or if there is a source of power within Canada forcing them to do that. So I think that really the explanation of the one-sided support for Israel is the power of empire, and that will continue until there is a source of power within this country and or around the world that it forces the Canadian government alongside some other governments into changing its one-sided support for Israel and saying we're not going to we want there to be some justice brought to the Middle East and some sort of fundamental reorientation of Israeli policy to Palestinians, and I think that's beholden on us as Canadians to build that movement in this country, demanding a change in Canadian support for Israel.
And that's where your book closes, with a chapter on how Canadian support of Palestinian human and democratic rights should orient their work. Is there something you'd like to add specifically as a kind of guidance to people involved in that particular issue as to how they should orient their work?
Well, I think it's important to orient work towards Canadian institutions complicit. That has to be we're sitting here. This is where we can have the most effect on providing Palestinians with space for liberation. A couple of things I propose in the book. One is the Canadian government to stop sending weapons to Israel, to get rid of the charitable status for the Jewish National Fund, end the security and border agreement that the Harper government signed in 2008 with Israel. There's unions that still buy State of Israel bonds to put pressure on those unions to divest, and then on a very simple consumerist level, to boycott the Chapters Indigo Kohl's bookstore chain, which supports Israeli mercenaries. But I think that at the crux of the issue, and many of these campaigns are already ongoing campaigns, it's just a matter of strengthening them. The crux of the issue is to focus on Canadian complicity, institutional complicity with Israel's ongoing dispossession of Palestinians, and I think too often the Palestinian solidarity movement and many international solidarity movements more generally tend to focus on the U.S. don't tend to focus on the Canadian complicit, and I think it's imperative that we deal with the ways in which institutions in this country contribute to Palestinian oppression.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thanks for coming in, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Eve Engler, activist and author. His latest book is Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. And you can purchase that book from independent progressive bookstores like People's Co-op Bookstore and Spartacus Books in Vancouver. Eve is on a speaking tour in BC, and Eve also will be speaking in Victoria, Nanaimo, Kelowna, Castlegar, and Nelson. And if you want exact dates, times, and places for that, you can find them all on his website, which is eveengler.com.